From the top of the rafters to the seats at ringside, welcome to the center of the ring. I am your host, the referee, Johnny T. And who's joining me today? None other than local friend of the neighborhood, my man, D-Fo. How you doing?
Damn! I'm good. I'm good, feeling great, baby. Everything is groovy can possibly be. Thank you once again, Johnny T, for having me in the center of the ring.
Anytime, my friend, and talk about some wrestling. How's your week been?
Can't complain, brother. Besides this heat, it's been hot. Like summer wants to come early as hell with his funky ass. But other than that,
you know, it's a little toasty out here at Southern Cal style. For the purposes of cataloging, we are recording this on Thursday, June the 11th. And, you know, the last, my guests tell me how they're doing because of the pandemic going on. But we've also had a whole lot of protests going on and a lot of civil unrest and just very interesting times. It's crazy how 60 days ago, you know, 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago, everyone was exchanging the best recipes for banana bread and how the overarching message was, we're all in it together. And, well, damn it, pal, look at what happened over the last couple of weeks. Yowie, wowie, to quote my good friend Bray Wyatt, wowzers.
I can't believe you said out of all the things you said, exchanging banana bread, classic Johnny T.
It's the truth, man. Everybody was online exchanging recipes for the best banana bread and, you know, how to bake better cookies and how to keep your patience with your kids. Now that you got to be a teacher at the house and homeschooled, it was just such a different vibe like 2 months ago, 3 months ago. And yet here we are, man. Here we are. How
man,
you doing?
You're absolutely right about that, man. All joking aside, man, I'm good with, you know, in spite of pretty much everything that's going on, man. I mean, you, me, and the rest of the world, obviously we have no choice but to, or we had no choice but to readjust to this new lifestyle, because that's pretty much what it is. And hey, I mean, and pretty much we all have no choice but to take it in stride, man. So that's just what I've been doing, man. Just rolling with the punches, just trying to keep a positive head and keep a positive mind, and not go cuckoo, because it's kind of easy to fall into the cuckoo's nest, if you will, you know, with all these shenanigans. That's what I like to call it, all these shenanigans.
You know, I feel like everybody who had a New Year's resolution for 2020 gets the ultimate pass for not reaching their resolution in 2020.
just the all-time ultimate mulligan, right?
Oh my goodness. Like, yo, this wasn't even like people didn't even have a chance to get started before just the dominoes started falling. It just seemed like from the Kobe Bryant thing, and it just seemed like almost every 2 weeks after that it was just one sad thing after the other after the other. But to that end, there's room for things to improve and get better. And one of the things that we like to do around here to make life feel a little more bearable and give us just these moments of feel better, if you will, is talk about wrestling.
Yes.
And today we're going to talk about a wrestler who broke a lot of barriers. I noticed a lot of other podcasts and, you know, appropriately gauging their tone around stuff. A lot of real world stuff that's taking place. The world of professional wrestling has an interesting reputation, depending on who you ask. It's been a fair thing for black performers, and then if you ask others, it's been a completely unfair thing for black performers. today we're going to talk about one who broke a tremendous barrier. People know him by the name Farouk. Some were introduced to him in that role as the Nation of Domination. Smarts and those who've been around a little longer will recognize this man as WWE Hall of Famer. We're talking about the great Ron Simmons, who would go on to become the first Black heavyweight champion in a major wrestling promotion in the modern era. And some would say he was the second, depending on who you ask. But when he won the WCW Heavyweight Championship and he beat Vader at a WCW event, and this would have been in the year 1992, it just seemed, based off of the reaction of that crowd, that maybe this was something that people might have been ready for. Do you think that the reaction that Ron Simmons received that night, do you think that that was based off the fact that people either hated Vader that much, that people just liked Ron Simmons that much? Or do you think people even put it together like, my God, it's time for us to get a Black champion, pal. Let's try something different. And we're excited for that. Which of the three do you think it was? And then we're going to backtrack and talk a little bit about what led to him getting there and then his eventual run. And he had a small run in ECW, then WWE. What do you think?
I believe it's an ambrosia of all three of those. Vader at the time was a big, massive heel. And two, Ron Simmons was that guy. He was that popular. He got over, as, you know, the wrestling lingo goes. but no, Ron Simmons in his own right was was shining, and he was ready for that next step. So it was a mixture. It was a mixture, I feel, man, of all three of those things. The last option, it was because of Cowboy Bill Watts, who was running WCW at the time. He basically saw dollar signs. He saw that mighty dollar, the green, in Ron Simmons. And he felt that Ron was ready to, you know, to hold that mantle, to be on that mantle. So, yeah, man. That was just such a powerful moment. It really was. Like, that resonated with me. And I was, what, six, seven? Yeah, something like, yeah, man. And I remember jumping up and down for joy and driving everybody crazy in the house, my mom and my grandmother. You know, I remember that like it was yesterday, man. And it was just, it really was truly a moment. I mean, it was, I'm not even trying to put extras on it, Johnny. Like, there were literally, I think I saw a couple people, like, you know what I'm saying, the fans, you know, got so into it and were so excited and got like a little emotional. Because they felt that it was a moment, a monumental moment.
In WCW, it felt like that particular title just toggled back and forth between a small circle of people. It was Flair, it was Steamboat, it was Sting, might have been Lex. Then it go back to Flair. You know, it just toggled with a small group of people. So when Vader got it, it was like, all right, we're going to start advancing around here a little bit. And Vader had a decent run with it. And then I was one of those who, even though the story was set up in such a way where it was like, well, yeah, Ron Simmons should get it. But then it was like, Ron Simmons won't get it at the same time.
Right.
You know, like, this is to build a better bad guy. And so Ron Simmons walking into the world of professional wrestling walked in as truly a consummate professional athlete. He would be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2008 from his tenure while he played at Florida State. He would go on to the NFL in the 1981 draft and play for the Cleveland Browns. Not to be mistaken for Cleveland Brown off of Family Guy. He did not play for that Cleveland Brown, but the actual football team in 81 and 82. He would go on to the USFL Tampa Bay Bandits from 83 to 85, and he find his way Tampa. He met up with a future professional wrestler named Lex Luger, and they would walk into the world of wrestling and change things. In 1986, Ron Simmons finally made his way to the squared circle. He defeated Ivan Koloff in St. Louis, and they gave him a nice little run. He would meet a guy that we would come to know as Yokozuna along the way, defeated him. Yokozuna wasn't nearly as large at that time in stature as he would eventually become, so I don't want to paint the picture that Ron Simmons walked into wrestling just defeating giants. That was not the case. Defeated the Barbarian, whose time had come to an end in WWF, and he went on ahead and found his spot in Jim Crockett Promotions in WCW. And he beat a number of folks who had established themselves as a wrestler, either from Vince's territory or from the AWA. He would go on and team with this one guy named Steve Williams. Ever heard of him, Dorian?
I do. Indeed.
Yeah. They teamed up the third annual Jim Crockett Senior Memorial Cup in Greenville, South Carolina, and that was in April of 1988. However, they were defeated by Mike Rotunda. If you guys don't know who that is, that would be IRS, a.k.a. Bray Wyatt's daddy, and Kevin Sullivan. And this was because Ron Simmons was hit with a foreign object. Man, those foreign objects during this point in time usually did a lot of damage. And Ron Simmons was no stranger to receiving the damage from that foreign object. 89 through 91, he would go on to meet up with this one guy called the Natural Butch Reed and Teddy Long, and they would form Doom, which, in my opinion, was one of the greatest tag teams ever.
You believe so, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they were the greatest of all time, but I do believe that they were great at that time.
Yes, indeed. I like how you phrased that.
Yeah, I believe that Doom was a really, really good, a really great tag team. I feel like Ron Simmons and Butch Reed wrestled really well together as a team. And I'm going to even say this. I feel that Butch Reed performed better in Doom in WCW than he performed as the Natural Butch Reed in WWF. Challenge. What do you think about that?
Oh, there's no challenge. You are absolutely right. I 100% agree with you on that one, brother.
I don't know what it is about, because Butch Reed came into WWF, and I mean, in my opinion, he had all the tools that it took to be the man, not the champion, not the world's champion, but I mean, definitely an IC champion, for sure.
Oh.
And he never teamed with anybody long enough to actually become a tag team champ of any real purpose. How come you think he didn't hit better?
I have no idea, man. I mean, and it's funny that you said he had the talent, which he did. He had the talent and the tools to be an Intercontinental Champion. I believe he was slated to be Intercontinental Champion before, for whatever reason, he basically pieced out the company and insert one Honky Tonk Man. So Honky Tonk Man was actually supposed to be Butch Reed.
Well, the honky tonk man ended up okay. I know you didn't care for him very much. I thought he was entertaining. If I have to put value on who had more entertainment value for the company at the time, it probably was a better decision to go with Honky Tonk Man.
I liked Honky Tonk Man. Especially Honky Tonk Man latter years. You know, oh my God, the shoot interviews. I don't know if you ever partaken of any of those, man. Honky Tonk.
Oops. Yeah. So much so that I'm surprised that he found his way to the WWE Hall of Fame. Wow. He no mercy. Just ferocious.
Yeah.
Wow. So, Doom. Let's talk about Doom a little bit. A little bit of the stuff that they did. So, they defeated the Steiner Brothers for the NWA World Tag Team Championships at Capital Combat in 1990, and they ran with the titles for nine full months. And that's quite a run for wrestling at that time. Just the cycle of pay-per-views were significantly less than what they would become. Most of the promotions that were in the pay-per-view market during those years, WWF was running four of them. And WCW, I think, was running like two or three, and it would toggle between that and Clash of Champions. So to get a 9 month run and title, it wasn't an infrequent thing for the title to change on WCW Saturday night or any of their weekly syndicated programming. So I think it was a pretty good run for them. They defeated teams like the Rock and Roll Express and the Four Horsemen, the team of Arn Anderson and Barry Windham. They defeated them at Starrcade 1990, which was the equivalent of WCW's WrestleMania, for the record. They lost to the Freebirds at Russell War. Doot, doot, doot.
That will forever be funny, man. That will forever be funny.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Michael P.S. So, as a result of that loss to the Freebirds, doot, 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 Doom would break up. And Simmons would turn face, and he would feud with Butch Reed for a little while, defeating him in a cage match at the very first WCW Super Brawl. And then Simmons would go on to defeat other mid-carders, Diamond Stud, Oz. He unsuccessfully challenged Lex Luger for the World Heavyweight Championship at Halloween Havoc. And he lost the Best of Three Falls match, 1-2 on that one. But it was just, at that time, he just to be positioned for a title match like that. Lex Luger drew money for WCW, and WCW was pretty selective at a point about who they put their heavyweight title on. Did you watch that match, or do you remember seeing that match or hearing about it at that time? How did you feel about the outcome of that match? Did you think that at that point that Ron Simmons really had a fair chance at it at that time, or not so much?
Oh, man. Yeah, I was biased. I was that little black kid on some revolution type tip. Yeah, I was rooting for Ron Simmons to beat Lex with a belt. And even in hindsight, I believe, looking back at it now, I believe it wouldn't have hurt to have pulled the trigger, because Lex was cool, but he wasn't, I don't want to say drawing, but it wasn't enough like, you know, they were expecting. Like WCW, when they looked at Lex Luger, they looked at him to actually be like a Ric Flair draw, not Ric Flair himself, but just the draw, just the appeal, you know what I mean? And Lex was there, and he was popular in his own right, and he drew in his own right, but it just wasn't there. And I'm not saying that Ron Simmons was just there a body just for Lex to get over on. But yeah, I mean, obviously the end result was, you know, Lex retained. So,
now keep in mind, this was in 1992, and I'm sorry, at that time it was 1991. Wrestling was going through kind of an interesting phase. It was getting ready to go through that awkward, I'm a middle school kid who now has acne and a changing voice kind of a phase. coming off of the golden era run of 1984 to about 89, 90. It was a big boom in popularity, courtesy of Vince McMahon and company. WCW never quite drew the same type of crowd or numbers, but there was still interest in them. And it just seems like from around 91-ish, maybe 92 or so, until about 96 to 97, it was just a kind of a weird period. People were kind of, there were a lot of kids that were kind of outgrowing it because it was, you know, a very kid-friendly product. Or it was older people who were used to watching it in smoky casinos, and they were kind of dying off. So it's just, it was a weird kind of a period of time in 91, 92. And keep in mind, from that event in 1991, we're looking probably at about a year to a year and a half later, where Ron Simmons would go on to actually become the WCW World Heavyweight Champion, leading to that victory, feuded with Cactus Jack, which a lot of people may not remember, but those are actually really good matches between Mick Foley and Ron Simmons. Worth it for you to go back in the Wayback Machine and take a look at that. The setup for Ron Simmons to walk in goes a little something like this. 92, it was a house show in Baltimore, scheduled title match between Sting and Big Van Vader, who was a WCW heavyweight champion at the time. And with a kayfabe injury of Jake the Snake Roberts putting the work in on Sting. And your good friend, WCW President Bill Watts, responded by holding a raffle to determine the number one contender. And it just would be that Simmons won the raffle and defeated Vader with a snap scoop power slam, win that championship. So by defeating Vader, Simmons becomes the first recognized African-American WCW World Heavyweight Champion and second African-American wrestler to win a World Heavyweight title, period. I do believe that he had a title run. I think it was like 5 or 6 months, somewhere around there. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like the longest run. It was almost like a Kofi Kingston run. I don't know, Kofi, did he get 5 months out of that?
Kofi got longer than that.
Oh, okay. Hard. Oh no, he got through WrestleMania to when SmackDown went to Fox. So yeah, Kofi got a little bit longer with the title. But given that no one really would have truly expected Ron Simmons to win a 5 month run out of a down south promotion, how do you think Ron Simmons did as a champion? How do you think he drew given the climate of wrestling at the time?
And that's kind of the unfortunate thing, man. I don't think he really did. It was like all the hype was there after him winning the belt, but then it just slowly just started to just kind of fizzle. It was just like a slow burn fizzle. So like his actual reign wasn't remembered in comparison to him winning the belt itself. His reign overall was just okay.
Well, apparently, I guess the powers that be at WCW felt the same way. Coming to the end of 1992, it would be on December 30th when Vader defeated Ron Simmons to regain the title. I think Vader was the better person to put the belt on.
Draw-wise, yes.
And I've got nothing against Vader. I'm a big fan of Leon. Rest in peace.
Oh, yeah.
Big fan of Vader.
Me too. Me too. That was my guy.
He could move. He looked like he was just a tough man. So, I mean, I don't have an issue with Vader having had the title. I just thought, who else might they have thought of putting the title on at that time? You know, I guess they're figuring, okay, we're going into a new year. We tried something new for this last half of the year. It's not really translating well. Or maybe it was just an issue of Ron Simmons' contract coming to an end and he didn't want to stay much longer.
Right. Well, I think after he lost the belt, I think that's when, I don't know if you're going to hit on it, but that's when he had a turn heel and talking about show me respect.
Yeah. He felt that the fans, it's funny how they, you know, there's a couple of key angles that always work for the heel turn. One of them is, you were there for the ride to the top and you were there for me when I made it. And then I get a rough snag and you just turn your back on me. You abandoned me in my hour of need. There's always that perspective that he'll tend to enroll with, and that was the one that Ron Simmons ran with in WCW. He took some losses. He unsuccessfully challenged Dustin Rhodes for the United States Heavyweight Championship. Here's a name for you, Paul Orndorff. He was the World Television Champion during his last few months in WCW, and he was unsuccessful with attaining that title as well. But I think the writings were on the wall for Ron Simmons to leave, and they did what most other wrestling promotions do. They attempt to decrease your value in the marketplace, and they just job you out. And WCW pretty much jobbed them out. Simmons was working without a contract. Sherry Martel, you remember her managing him?
I do, actually. It just popped into my head. I saw, yes, I do remember that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Seems like an odd pairing.
It does, but it worked. But at the same time, it didn't work just because, it was just it was obvious that, I don't know who the hell, it seemed as if maybe Ron rubbed somebody the wrong way that had a little bit of stroke, a little bit of power, because, when he lost the heavyweight belt, it was just a slow, like I said before, it was just like a slow burn. It was a slow nosedive. Like, he just went down, and it wasn't anything that they tried to do to try to, you know, still salvage him or to make him, you know, still make him a relevant talent, you know, a relevant contender.
Well, Ron Simmons would graduate from WCW with a win over Scott Armstrong on a September 10th, 1994 edition of WCW Worldwide.
Wow.
I'm not sure if they have episodes of WCW Worldwide on the network, but that was a thing at that time. And shortly after, he would run and make an appearance in Paul Heyman's Extreme Championship Wrestling, affectionately known as ECW. And so he had a short run there from late 94 until early 1995. And he tried to challenge Shane Douglas for the World Heavyweight Championship at the November to Remember event. Unsuccessful at acquiring that championship. And I don't know. I didn't watch ECW a whole lot. I'll be honest with you. I didn't even think it was even airing too much in the Los Angeles market until like later in its run. But I didn't watch it a whole lot to know a whole bunch about it at that time. So during that time that he was in ECW, I just thought Ron Simmons was just like kicking back at the house, relaxing, rehabbing.
Yeah.
Figuring out what his next move was going to be. No, this guy was a wrestler in an extreme environment.
Me too, man. I thought the same thing. It was just kind of like next thing you know, just Ron Simmons just kind of just disappeared from TV, you know. And then back when I was little, I don't know if when you were younger, I don't know if you were in the dirt sheets and Dave Meltzer's of the world of following of spoilers of who, you know what I'm saying, of what's happening and what's going on backstage. But when I was a kid, man, I had no idea of anything. The only thing I knew was, okay, with watching, being a fan and watching both WWE, WWF, and WCW was, okay, wrestler A was in WCW, and then I see wrestler A pop up in WWF, and then vice versa. That was that's all I knew. I didn't know the backstage politics or stories or whatever, you know, whatever was going on, you know, with whatever talent, you know. I had no idea. So yeah. And the same with ECW. I didn't find out about ECW until, remember that storyline? I don't want to get all up into just ECW because we're talking about Ron Simmons. Remember the storyline later on in WWF where they invaded Raw? Okay, yes. That was like my first time ever hearing about ECW. And then in terms of watching it, I didn't watch ECW or find out until like, I think it was like 90, maybe like 98, 99. Would you say, would that be like the same time frame that you were actually able to come across ECW and actually watch it, you know, for the first, you know what I'm saying, for the first time?
Yeah.
So
it was almost when they were done. It was almost a done deal. And it was only because at that time, there's this product that came out called AOL. And these things started popping up. These websites started popping up. And so it wasn't YouTube yet, but you can still find some of that stuff. And so the thing wasn't social media. Well, I guess the original social media might have been just email and chat rooms. And there were some wrestling chat rooms and people would put stuff up about ECW. And that's really how I discovered it. And this is, again, this is going like 98, 99 is when I'm finding out about this. So that was the thing for me, you know. But before finding out about it, it really didn't matter that as far as Farouk is concerned or Ron Simmons is concerned, because in 1996, he would find his way through a conversation with the great Bruce Prichard, found his way into the World Wrestling Federation. And he debuted in 1996. It was the summer on a episode of Monday Night Raw. And it was like the worst outfit I think I ever seen on a wrestler.
Jesus.
It was just a sky blue, North Carolina blue, just gladiator suit. He would just run out there and just kick Ahmed Johnson in the kidney. And it was all of this hype about, oh my God, who is this guy? Who is this guy? Who is this guy? And we would run with the name Farouk.
Farouk Assad.
What did you think about the way they introduced a former world heavyweight champion and by many accounts, first African-American world heavyweight champion by a major promotion, Farouk Assad?
Farouk Assad, I hated it because I remember as a kid, like, why is Ron Simmons what is Ron Simmons doing in this getup? Like, what the heck is going on? Like, I remember that, like, pinpoint. And I'm like, oh, his real name is Farouk, because, like I said, I'm still a kid. So I'm like, oh, okay. But, oh, my God. It was horrible. It was horrible.
Yeah. And then another weird pairing, because he was with Sonny. Which is like, ouch. Like, and there's no knock on Sonny, but it's just like you saw who Sonny was associated with prior to this. And then it's like, how would he be hooked up with like the blue gladiator? Like, what is this about? It was just a very, very odd pairing in a really, really weird way to come in. Just, I'm so glad that he was able to finish way stronger than he started, because this was a horrible, horrible start. Just bad.
Yeah. Just yes.
Bad. So, at some point, Farouk is going to drop the gladiator gimmick. Yay. And him and Sonny, they're not going to be on the same team anymore. Parted ways with Sonny. And then he formed the NOD. We are the nation. A domination. Doomed. 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 Nation. A domination. Oh, my gosh. And at this time, factions were growing in popularity in WWF. It was almost weird. It was almost like you have to be part of somebody's clique. And there were very few people who could stand on their own. But you had to be a part of the clique of somehow. And it seemed like the magic number for most stables was 4. Unless you were Degeneration X, and then it was like 5 or 6 or 7 sometimes. It seemed like it just, that one was a little different.
Right.
But I kind of like the Nation of Domination, because it went through like several different iterations. And I think I was just so happy to see him outside of that blue gladiator outfit. And I felt like the feud that he had with Ahmed Johnson before, you know, it finally ended with Nation of Domination version of Farouk, you know, but I'm glad that they deviated from the original look quickly, and we went with the Nation. You know, I guess this is as close to a Nation of Islam / Black Panther Party infiltration into the WWF. The original stable, they weren't all black guys. As a matter of fact, they mostly feuded with another black guy. Ahmed Johnson. which I guess they would become black on black violence. But it's they had a Royal Rumble match in 97. Do you remember that match, Ahmed Johnson?
Yeah, I remember.
Man, Farouk was doing a lot of lip talking in that match.
Yes.
If you go back and watch that match, Farouk was talking a whole lot of lip. He was directing traffic too. There was a couple of spots to hear him kind of like, all right, come on, Ahmed. Like, come on. Like, trying to help him out. Was Ahmed Johnson that bad?
Man.
In the ring?
I mean, you hear all the, you know, I've seen plenty of, you know, of shoot interviews of people talking about, you know, your Bruce Prichards of the world. Even Ron Simmons himself, Mark Henry. He's spoken about Ahmed Johnson, and yeah, they all pretty much, it's like he
got, universally, It's universally agreed upon that he's bad.
I mean, and then if you go back, I mean, you can kind of see stuff like, oh, you know, you kind of get your Vince McMahon on, oh, goddamn, what were you thinking with that maneuver? Yeah, Ahmed was, but Ahmed was still that dude, whatever. I embrace my own, whatever. I embrace my own Ahmed Johnson. You could never take it away from him. Ahmed Johnson was indeed the first African-American Intercontinental Champion. So at the end of it all, whether if he had it or if he didn't have it, he did.
He got that. Yeah, he got that accolade,
but he also was given a chance, pretty much like, okay, well, we're gonna go with you, and let's just see how it goes. And just unfortunately, you know, for his sake, it just didn't work. It just didn't work out. It just didn't work out. But I'll give Vince that credit. Vince McMahon looked at Ahmed and thought that he can really do something with him, and he can be really big and create another star. And he did go full gusto with Ahmed. Just didn't work out.
Well, the Nation of Domination would go through a number of superstars that would rotate in and out of it over the years, or over the time that the faction was active. Farouk had a match with The Undertaker for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. What I found so interesting about this, because I read across someone that posted a clip of a promo that Farouk cut, and I sent it to you, and we watched it, and he was breaking down facts the way he saw them in World Wrestling Federation.
And it wasn't...
Talking about how...
I was just going to say, it wasn't like he wasn't telling the truth.
Oh, no, he was very convicted by what he said. No question about it. He had lots of conviction behind the words of what he was talking about. And he basically cut a promo that was very ingenuous to the purpose of that faction. Basically talking about how the WWF has never had a black heavyweight champion. He said, when's the last time that happened? And he would say stuff like, sure, you might have had a token black guy hold the Intercontinental title like Ahmed Johnson or Bobo Brazil. He said, but you don't believe that we're good enough to be your champion. We're good enough to wash your car. Good enough to clean your homes, even raise your kids. But we're not good enough to be the champion. And he referred to The Undertaker as basically the company's white hope in so many words. He vowed to take the title from The Undertaker at the 1997 King of the Ring. And he did no such thing at that event. He blamed Crush and Savio Vega for a loss, and apparently, Crush and Savio Vega were members of the Nation of Domination up until that point, where he was kicked out, where they were both kicked out. And then guess what happened? Those guys who got kicked out would just form rival factions, because factions were, that was the answer for everything during this time. Well, we'll just make another gang. So, the Disciples of Apocalypse was formed. And that was led by Crush, and then Los Boricuas, formed by Savio Vega. And then Farouk recruited more African-American members to be part of the Nation, including a guy that would become quite a famous guy in the world of not wrestling, but just in the world, period. The half-black, half-Samoan Rocky Maivia.
I like how you had to put that out there, the half-black, half-Samoan.
The half black, half Samoan Rocky Maivia.
Skin looks like a Carol Frappuccino.
Right. Three stables, they feuded with one another throughout 1997. And then the summer of 97, Farouk again lost the tournament. He was trying to get that Intercontinental title. And, you know, it just didn't work out for Farouk at this point in time to have any individual titles. So we move on into 1998, and that Rocky Maivia would come to become quite a voice for the Nation of Domination and a voice of its own. Matter, Farouk's leadership of the Nation of Domination, increasingly challenged by Maivia, who at this point had shortened his name simply to The Rock, the man that we know as Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, had Rock beginnings out of the Nation of Domination, and he felt that he should be the leader because he had the Intercontinental Championship, a championship that Farouk could not capture. What do you think about The Rock's role in the Nation of Domination?
I thought it was simply beautiful. It was placed so perfectly. I know you remember when Rocky Maivia made his debut, and it was cool, but then it wasn't cool at the same time. And you know, throughout his run before, I believe he ended up suffering a knee injury and was on the sidelines for a little bit. You already know the infamous chance of "Die Rocky Die," and yeah, he really took that to heart and personal. And pretty much when he came back, yeah, I mean, you talk about 360 degrees. I mean, people were like really booing him, like didn't want to see him, not just wrestling, but just at all, you know, type of booze, type of heat. And
yeah,
Rocky just proved himself, man. And yeah, I enjoyed the dialogue between both him and Farouk. You know, Farouk, like, looking at him, yeah, like, okay, I can care less what you did. You know, like, you a youngin. I'm not new to this. I'm true to this. I'm trying to give you game, give you knowledge. You know, I'm the one that brought you in here, and you gonna try to, you know. So yeah, I just like that, like that dynamic, and Rocky just being the young, you know, pretty much his stuff don't stink, you know, attitude and aura about him, you know. So yeah, that was a perfect clash.
Well, upon his exit from the Nation of Domination, he spent part of 1998 feuding with everybody that used to be in the stable. Briefly tagged up with Too Cold Scorpio for one of the brief periods of time that he was part of the promotion. In 98, Ron Simmons, he would begin teaming up with Bradshaw, and they were called the Acolytes, a very violent tag team that were associated with the Ministry of Darkness led by The Undertaker, because The Undertaker had a stable as well. And it would be from this stable that Farouk would go on to finally find a certain level of success that he hadn't achieved in World Wrestling Federation. During the time of being part of the APA and part of the Ministry of Darkness, Bradshaw and Simmons would go on to win the tag team championships a couple of times. They defeated Kane and X-Pac, but then they would lose to the Hardy Boys. And you know what? That's not a bad loss to take. If you had to take one, that was an investment for the future. That was exactly a good one to take. And it was a make sense loss at Fully Loaded. And of course, in the corner of the Hardy Boys was your good friend Michael P.S. Hey,
I hold it down. I got an idea.
Why don't the Hardy Boys go ahead and take the titles off of the APA? Feels like a good idea to me. And in hindsight, Michael P.S. Hayes, it was a great idea. So, the Ministry of Darkness would disband in 1999. However, Farouk and Bradshaw, they continued as a team, and they kind of graduated from this moniker of these dark guys with weird symbols, you know, branded on their chest, and they decided they wanted to be brawlers who enjoy drinking beer, smoking cigars, and taking people for their money at card games. And because of their size and their mean streak, they kind of took on the persona of bodyguards and mercenaries. And for the right money, you know, they'll watch your back for you. That's what you needed to do. And this was the perfect case of when timing and skill come together to create the magic. It took 3 years of bouncing around for Ron Simmons to come of age, and it's probably in its most marketable gimmick that the WWF had for him. What do you think about Ron Simmons' run with Bradshaw as the APA, the Acolytes Protection Agency?
Man, I loved it. I loved it. They were a perfect mix of two badass dudes that didn't take no crap from anybody and had the confidence that, okay, I'm going to do basically two bullies. I'm going to do whatever I want with you, however I want with you, and what you going to do? You going to whoop my ass? I think not. I'm waiting for you to touch me. But then they were also hilarious. And I know that you would know this. Remember backstage, the infamous, okay, they'll be in their area and they'll have the door, the wooden door. And how, yeah. You yep. know, people, you know what I'm saying, would come in, whatever, to ask for their services, and they would get up like, hey, knock on the door. And would literally, you know, have people backing up, whatever, you know, to knock on the door. And then when they say that they can enter, then they walk, you know, open the door and walk through the door. But there was nothing, that was just, oh man, that was infamous right there, man. Yeah. It was real nice, and it gelled into what was going on at that point in WWE. You know, overall, the overall vibe and feel of the product, man. And yeah, Farouk finally had some running success, and it's
and it was also during this run, during this particular period of time, where the one word catchphrase caught fire. Damn! That was the one. So they had a really good run. And they teamed together until 2002. And then Farouk was drafted to SmackDown as there was the brand split. And around the time Ron Simmons, he began wrestling under his real name because the terrorist group Al Qaeda had a training camp called Al Farouk, and we just couldn't have the two confused and mixed up in any kind of a way. So Simmons, he had a real brief heel run. He teamed up with Reverend Devon until he left television in December 2002. December 2003, he returned to WWE with Bradshaw and the APA reunited. And it was real short-lived. Ron Simmons was coming to the end of his in-ring story. And it was a real quick storyline. Temporary SmackDown General Manager Paul Heyman he told the APA he lost another match. It's going to be the end of the APA. And so it was just assumed that everybody was fired from the faction. Well, everybody being Bradshaw and Farouk. But Paul Heyman told Bradshaw that he was allowed to stay, and it was from that space that Simmons retired from wrestling, at least in terms of the in-ring action. He accused Bradshaw of not being a faithful friend in storyline, but in reality, Simmons had been planning to retire. He had some issues with health, Edge, and they already were positioning him for a backstage agent role with the company. And the day that they ran that angle on SmackDown was pretty much when he rolled off into the sunset from any in-ring action. What a great career for Ron Simmons. He would make a couple of appearances for special WWE events, Raw 25. They would do the old school episodes. He would make appearances there. Maybe show his face for a couple of WrestleMania spots just in passing. He would see something that looked kind of weird and he'd give you that look of disapproval. They'd hit you with that, damn! Out of nowhere. And he ended up on what they call the Legends contract. So basically, he won't be anywhere else, but he won't be doing a whole lot. And he was celebrated with an induction into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2012. Great career for a great athlete. And quite frankly, unless you're Ahmed Johnson, one that really no one has anything negative to say about. How would you summarize your feelings around Ron Simmons' career? And do you feel that his career was better positioned in WCW or better positioned in WWE, WWF?
I would say he was better positioned in WWE. Better positioned in WWE. I still slightly hold on to the fact that Ron Simmons should have been the first African American WWF champion. And not just because I'm an African American male. I just thought just with how the nation was pushed that he got over.
Yeah.
You know, those were some of the, like, and Ron Simmons, and I mean this with no disrespect at all to the man, but Ron Simmons wasn't really known to be like a real big promo guy. You know what I mean? But you know, the leeway that he had, you know, with Farouk and with the nation, you know, he was hitting some, you know what I'm saying, some real life stuff, you know, issues that people could relate. And in essence, you know, that both black people and white people could relate to. So I just really think that it could have been even sweeter even if it was due to shenanigans or whatever the case. Ron Simmons beats the Undertaker, becomes the heavyweight champion, and they could have ran with that for even, you know, if it wasn't like a short period, even just for a short period, they could have ran with that. I felt that he deserved that, especially after Farouk Asad and the turquoise, what you said, North Carolina blue glacier gimmick, you know, that they had him wearing, you know. But he did more in WWE. Like we were just saying, but especially with the APA taking off, with Acolytes taking off, how they did, and they were able to break off and become stars. Him and Bradshaw were able to become stars in their own right.
Without an explanation, for African American wrestlers are concerned, so many people felt Junkyard Dog was probably a miscarriage of justice and probably the one who should have had that heavyweight title run during the golden era of WWF while Hulk Hogan was on top. Do you feel that it would have been better for Junkyard Dog to have been that first champion? Because he walked into WWF already a huge superstar. Or do you think that if you could have made the choice to put it on Ron Simmons and for him to be the first one? Without an explanation, JYD or Ron Simmons?
Good question. Good question. I would say JYD. If they would have, I mean, I didn't watch Mid-South Wrestling, obviously, but I look back and I watched them in Mid-South, and Junkyard Dog was that dude. Like, seriously, John, you know what I mean, Johnny? He was really that dude. And if pretty much if Vince just would have simply just seemed like, okay, we got Junkyard Dog. Okay, we're going to just place him in and just left him alone and didn't change a doggone thing. Then without a doubt, JYD and JYD would have fit in, you know, his character. You know, he checked all the boxes of how Vince sees, you know, it's not wrestling, pal. It's we entertain. We're entertainment. JYD checked all those boxes. Oh, he has to be.
JYD is going to be discussed.
He has to.
Real soon with you and I. JYD, you know what? Hey, let's just go ahead and agree that that's going to be what we talk about next time when you and I talk. I'm real interested in delving a little further into him. I feel like he doesn't get talked about enough because he really was that guy. But for right now, today's guy, Ron Simmons, a man who leaves the world of wrestling with a number of amazing accolades, NWA Florida Heavyweight Wrestling Champion, the Memphis Championship Wrestling Tag Team Champion, Bradshaw, Ohio Valley Wrestling Tag Team Champion, Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Inspirational Wrestler of the Year 1992. He was also ranked in the top 20 500 singles wrestlers from Pro Wrestling Illustrated in 1992, no doubt because of the title win, I'm sure, as well as number 91, the top 100 tag teams of PWI with Butch Reed in 2003. So he got a Legacy Award some years later, WCW World Heavyweight Championship, probably the biggest title that he's held, and next to probably a Hall of Fame ring, WCW and NWA World Tag Team Championship with Butch Reed, as well as he had another run with Big Josh, someone we will talk about at another time. Too much to explain who he is at the moment. And three-time tag team champion in WWF, and of course, the 2012 Hall of Fame recipient. And one title that you will not find on the internet, or one title that you won't find in the wrestling history books, is he owns the title of one of my all-time favorite wrestlers, period. Every iteration of him, even when he had the long Jerry curl, the Jerry juice.
We don't go back to that.
I can't help it. We're going to talk about Teddy Long one day too, but I'm excited to talk about Junkyard Dog, and you know, let's just put it on the docket and make it happen for next week. Let's do that. Yeah, we'll talk offline about what we're going to talk about, but we're going to bring JYD into the center of the ring, and we are going to wrap it up because we are just over an hour. And for my listeners out there, I really do try to keep these things at about 45 minutes to an hour, but Ron Simmons was you could talk about Ron Simmons for 2 hours and not really get into everything. This was really just a nice skim over. I noticed a lot of the wrestling podcasts really, you know, gone on to acknowledge a lot of the black wrestlers who have made a contribution to the world of wrestling. And as a black person, I can appreciate that that's happening. And it's not only happening in February as a Black History Month thing. Of course, the conditions of the world, there's a lot of activity around equality and, you know, fairer treatment for all residents and just all human beings. Especially if Black Lives Matter is really, really taking on a role in vocalizing a lot of miscarriages of justice out there. And on only the ones that we're seeing, there's so many others that don't get seen. And even the ones that get seen always see justice. So for all the other podcasters out there that are making the space to acknowledge this, I appreciate it. I really didn't want to make this a podcast around a civil rights movement kind of a thing. I wanted to kind of stick with the same tone and voice of the other episodes that we do, but at the same time also make sure that I'm not being tone deaf to everything that's going on. Yes, I'm very well aware of everything that's going on in the world and keeping a watchful eye over things. I think the biggest way to make changes is at your voting station in November. So make sure you register to vote. Believe it or not, and there's a lot of your conspiracy theorists out there who believe that votes don't get counted and they don't matter. It's the system that we have, and it's the way to make your voice matter the most at this point. Make sure that we're voting. And if I can vote for, like I said, one of my all-time favorite wrestlers, it would have been Ron Simmons. And I wanted to make sure that we celebrated Ron Simmons today because you're just a tough, tough ass man.
Yes, he was.
He was a real bad dude in the ring. He was that kind of guy. He's that kind of guy that you see him just say, damn. Indeed. And that was probably going to be the most serious moment that you catch at the center of the ring, the referee Johnny T, before we get out of here. D-Foe, you always do shout outs. They're probably tired of hearing their voices now, but go ahead and
drop a few names. Thank you once again for having me, especially for this one, because Ron Simmons is indeed one of my favorite wrestlers of all time as well. And I had the honor and the privilege of beating Ron Simmons a couple of years ago at a meet and greet. And the man was nothing but cool and nice and just, man. And the man is still, Johnny, you know what I'm saying, was still, like, in, like, tip-top shape.
He's an athlete to the core, even though he's not in the ring, you know, he's still taking care of himself.
For the picture, man, it was just kind of like, I'm like, dang, you know what I'm saying? It was just crazy. But, you know, so thank you so much for having me on, you know, with talking about Ron Simmons, man. I do appreciate that from the heart. And just for everybody out there that's listening, man, we already know what's going on out here in the world. It's just crazy. All these shenanigans. Just try your best to hold your head and stay positive. Whether you believe in God or whatever you believe in, whatever religion, respectfully, just know that despite everything, we will overcome this and we will be able to move on and move forward. So my heart just goes out to everybody and just, hey, ELE, in the immortal words of Jackie Moon, ELE, everybody love everybody.
Hey, we should all be able to subscribe to that. Everybody love everybody. And we love for you to join us again next week at the Center of the Ring, where my guest is going to be D-Foe again. And we're going to talk about JYD next week. So there's a spoiler for you. You know what's coming up. And thanks for joining again. Thanks for tuning in. Like something. Share something. Hit me up about something. Just do something. Till next time, the referee Johnny T, D-Foe, signing off.